You've got to believe you're a big deal before anyone else will believe you're a big deal. And if you're waiting for a degree or training, stop waiting. Just act as if you belong, and people will treat you as if you belong.
Welcome to Stand Out, Get Noticed, the podcast that helps you speak and present with rockstar confidence. I'm Christina Canters, your host and founder of The C Method Communication Skills Training. For free resources and to subscribe to the show, visit thecmethod.com. Hello there, Rockstar. Welcome to episode 104 of Stand Out, Get Noticed. Christina Canters with you here. I hope you are doing absolutely wonderful. I'm doing pretty well myself. I've got some exciting news for you, which I'll tell you about in a moment. But first, I want you to think about this. Have you ever seen someone who just seems to have presence? In that they walk into a room and people take notice. And when they speak, people shut up and they listen and they give them their full attention. And they project this sense of ease, poise, and self-assurance. So maybe it's the CEO of your company, or your boss, or a speaker you saw at an event. Or maybe you saw a celebrity on TV who just seemed to have that presence. Now imagine if you could be that person. How amazing would it feel? What sort of leader would you be? What could you achieve if you have presence like that? Now, if you're thinking, well, that's not me, that's not possible, then get ready because you're about to discover that it is possible. And my guest, Sari de la Motte, is here to show you how. Sari is the CEO and founder of Forte, a communications consulting firm. Sari has done extensive training in nonverbal communications and, through her company, helps professionals craft and deliver compelling messages. Sari has a no-nonsense approach to communicating the difference between nonverbal communications and the, quote, woo-woo secret language that body language experts talk about. Now, Sari has lots of fantastic videos online, and I watched one where she talked about presence and how you can build your level of presence simply by changing your non-verbal communication, as in your body language. So this is what I was really interested to talk to her about, because I've mentioned presence here on the podcast before, but I haven't dived deep into it in its own episode. So in this conversation, you'll learn the four main components of presence that Sari teaches to her clients, how we can practice those things and incorporate them into our own professional lives. I learned a ton in this conversation, so I'm confident that you will too. Show notes will be at thecmethod.com/Sari. That's S-A-R-I. Okay, before we get to the conversation with Sari, I do have a very exciting announcement. Da-da-da-da! The Overcome Public Speaking Anxiety course is now live. Oh yeah, you may have heard me mention this last week. It's something I've been working on for quite a while now. It's a video training course. Each video is 3 to 5 minutes long, so it's very digestible. And it addresses five of the most crippling thoughts that hold us back from being a confident, effective public speaker. Thoughts such as, I must be perfect, I have to know the answer to every question, I have to be interesting and engaging the whole time. So those are some of the thoughts that I address in the course. And I go deep into why we have these thoughts and how we can overcome them. Each lesson comes with a powerful, practical exercise to further help you banish those fears forever. So if you get anxious and nervous around public speaking, but you know that this is something you need to do in order to get noticed at work and accelerate your career, then you should definitely check it out. And for the next 48 hours, I'm offering it to podcast listeners and subscribers for 50% off. That's right. So it's 50% off, $19 instead of $39. That's less than the cost of two margaritas. Too easy. So jump on it, register now and get access to it instantly at thecmethod.com/anxietycourse. That's thecmethod.com/anxietycourse. I look forward to having you on board. Okay, let's move on to the conversation with the very lovely and funny Sari de la Motte. Hope you enjoy.
Well, Sari, thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I see that you used to be a classically trained pianist.
I did. I guess I'm still classically trained, technically.
And you did that professionally?
I taught professionally. I was actually getting my master's degree, finishing up my master's degree in teaching, and then I was on my way to get a doctorate in piano pedagogy, which means how to teach piano, and because I wanted to work at the university level, and that's when my career took a turn, and I am now where I am today.
So tell me more about how you then transitioned into teaching people in nonverbal communications and starting your firm.
Well, it was interesting. My mentor at the time, who was really probably the best teacher ever, she said, you need to go to this week-long nonverbal communication training. And of course, my first question was, why? You know, when I hear nonverbal communication back then, and as many of our people do now that come in contact with our company, we immediately think it's the body language stuff. You know, I'm going to go and I'm going to learn how to, you know, tell if someone's lying because they're blinking or touching their nose. And I thought, why in the world do I need this? But she was really big on, we teach who we are. And so for you to be an excellent teacher, you need to be an excellent communicator. I think this will really help. So we, of course, do the things that our mentors tell us to do. And so I went, kind of got dragged there. And I was expecting the body language nonsense, and it was not that at all. It was all about how we come off and how we sometimes get in our own way about the weird nonverbal things that we're doing. And I was hooked. I chucked my plans for getting the PhD. I went and I followed this man, this train who did the training that week long, all over the United States on my own dime, and became trained under him for a year. And then I went back to teaching, which is where I was comfortable. So I really started in education, and I was training teachers on how to use these techniques to manage their classroom, to teach more effectively. And then from there, I transitioned to corporate. And then the Oregonian here did a story on me, and a lawyer read about it and said, oh, I wonder if you can come help me pick a jury and be a better lawyer. And I said, I don't see why not. And now about 90% of my work personally is in the legal field, although Forte, the company that I own, still does all the corporate training as well.
Right. So what was it about it that got you hooked, that made you just fall in love? Because that's a big deal, like falling in love that strongly straight away and dropping everything to do it.
Well, I've always been that kind of person that loves to learn about myself. And so I was so amazed to see, because I mean, how many of us, for example, I always ask my audience members, how many of you have been videotaped? And maybe, you know, a third of the group raises their hands, and I always say, it's horrifying, isn't it? And everyone goes, oh, yeah, it's the worst. And so I think really shining a light on, you know, the nonverbal communication is the way we move through the world. And so if you tinker with how you're coming across nonverbally, it makes the most huge impact on the people around you. And yet the things that you're doing are actually quite small and nuanced. And that's what hooked me, is that these tiny little changes could make such a huge difference on whether my students learned what I was teaching that day, or whether I got coffee with the barista the way I wanted it. I mean, it just went across the board. It just literally changed the way that I saw how the world worked. And I'm now seeing that with my clients, and that when you kind of take a peek behind the curtain, the huge impact how we come off nonverbally. I think we're all wired since birth to see other people nonverbally and adapt to their cues, but we never look at ourselves, and we don't know the sometimes weird things that we're doing that are sending the wrong message. So I think that's why I was hooked immediately, because it made such a huge impact on how I was coming across.
So when you took those learnings to your music teachings, what was the biggest difference that you saw in terms of the way you used your, you know, your body language to get your message across to your students?
Well, you know, I think it had a bigger impact, because I always thought, you know, teaching always came fairly easy to me. I always really connected with my students. I felt I was nice and authoritative. I think it really played out for me, and which might be the big learning for your audience, is this idea of confidence. Is that, you know, when I started to really work in this field with people who weren't teachers, right? I've been a teacher my entire life. And not only that, I was a music teacher. So I wasn't, you know, a quote unquote usual or normal teacher. And here now I'm working with executives and now trial lawyers. And this was that huge part where I had to really go inside and go, okay, wait a minute. Can I really do this? And that's when I really came to this idea, and we work so much with that now in our work, is that body language starts in the brain. And so often I would be working with someone and saying, okay, I need your gestures to be bigger, or let's use this voice modulation, and they couldn't get there. And it wasn't until I said, what's the story that you're holding on to that's causing this nonverbal behavior. And boy, out would tumble this, well, I'm just so afraid I'm going to lose the trial, or I'm so nervous about this presentation. And I say, well, let's deal with that. And as soon as we dealt with it, the body language changed. I was just, whoa, that just blew my mind. And so a lot of people now look at this work as definitely communication work, but it's almost counseling in some ways with my one-on-one work with my clients. But I found that I also had to do the same thing. I had to be able to walk into a trial lawyer whose, you know, their last verdict was $10 million and act as if I belonged there. In fact, I had a high school student ask if they could come observe me one day. And I said, sure. So he came with me to this meeting with this attorney, and we went to coffee afterwards, the high school student and I. And I said, well, what'd you think? And he said, I was just blown away by how when you walked in there, it's like you own the place. And I said, look, you've got to act the part. When you're with these big trial attorneys that are splashed across the papers, you know, you've got to act like you belong. And then they will, in turn, treat you as if you belong. And I think so many people, particularly women, not always women, but so many people wait for the training. Once I have enough training, then I can act, you know, that I'm a big deal. Or, you know, once I have the right schooling, then I can really act like I'm a big deal. And I'm here to say, and this is what I tell my clients all the time, you've got to believe you're a big deal before anyone else will believe you're a big deal. And if you're waiting for a degree or training, stop waiting. Just act as if you belong, and people will treat you as if you belong. And it gets communicated nonverbally. I really believe that.
So what's that fear that people have of, like, what's holding them back from acting as if they are that person?
Well, you know, I think it's back to, we all have heard this, the imposter syndrome, right? We think that who we are comes down to what we know. And I know when I'm training new coaches here at Forte, it's a lot of it is, well, how do I coach this person? I've never been in that field, so I'm not sure what to, you know, if I'm going to have the right terminology. I always tell my coaches, I say, this isn't about you knowing about their field. This is about you knowing our field, which is communication. They'll teach you what you need to know in terms of, you know, how they speak and what their verbiage is. But our job is to help them show up and be big and be real. And I think people are always waiting for, again, like I said, that training or that degree to give them the confidence. And it's so hard to recognize that, you know, for example, if we talk about experts, you know, who's an expert? There's no expert school. There's no expert degree, right?
No, it's all perceived.
It's all perceived. And so you need to show up as the expert for people to believe you are an expert. And once you do that, I mean, I think that's how this music teacher with two advanced degrees in music, and I don't even have a communications degree, is now running a national communications firm that works with top attorneys and executives all over the United States, because it's not like I was lying and saying, oh, I know how to do this when I didn't. I knew that I could teach people how to communicate better. I just didn't have a lot of the experience, and I don't have a communications degree. But my confidence is what got me in the door, and then I was able to prove with my work that I could do it, and that's how I grew my business. That's why I think most people have a fear of, well, they're going to ask me what my degree is, or they're going to ask me how much experience I have. You know, I've said to people, you know how many times people have asked me what my training is, or what if I have a degree in this? And they go, how many times? I say, zero. In 15 years of doing this, I've never had anyone ask me, outside of just curiosity, once we've gotten to know each other, you know, who are you, and how do you think you have the right to be teaching this information? Never, because I can nonverbally communicate, I've got this. You can trust this. And then, of course, you have to deliver. Nonverbal communication is not a Band-Aid for bad skills. You have to be able to deliver. But I think most people have the goods. They just can't communicate they have the goods. They're waiting for someone else to tell them that they're great. And they just have to decide that they're great and communicate it.
Mm, I love that. It's like, instead of waiting for permission to be given to you, mm-hmm. just give yourself that permission.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk a lot around here about presence. And presence is your, what we call your nonverbal persona. So everyone has presence. You know, people go, I wish I had more presence. I go, you have presence. The question is it the presence that you want? Are you showing up the way that you want? And that comes back to this idea of being big and being powerful, and people continue to think, well, that's something I have to earn, that's something I have to have a degree, that's something I have to, somebody has to tell me I'm great. And I always come back to, no, it starts with you. We teach other people how to treat us. You've got to decide that you're a big deal for other people to think you're a big deal.
Can we dive a little bit deeper into presence? Because mm-hmm. I've seen you speak about it before and you say that there's four parts to it. Is
four
that correct?
Components. Yeah.
Four components. Yep. Can you take us through each of those?
Sure. So the first one is mind. So that's the you can't be have presence if you're not actually present. And so I think that's the first place that most people go awry, is that they're not actually here. So I'm working with a trial attorney and I'm watching them in court and they're asking a question of a potential juror. And as the juror starts to speak, where does the attorney go? Are they actually listening? No, they go in their head and they think, oh, what am I going to do with that? How am I going to follow up on that? What does everybody else think? Is this a good juror? Is this a bad juror? And then they lose this great opportunity to follow up on whatever the juror said because they weren't actually present and they weren't actually listening. And I think a lot of us do that. We tend to try to preempt the inevitable silence we are afraid is going to happen. In fact, we're so afraid of silence, I think. Humankind, for some reason, is afraid of silence. In fact, many of my seminars, I have us hold silence together for 2 minutes, and it's almost like people want to rip their faces off and run from the room. But silence is so powerful. We're so afraid of it. And so I think the first component really is to get present, to have enough self-trust that you're going to know what to say when the person stops talking, and that it will come to you more easily, in fact, if you're actually present with that juror or whoever you're speaking to, than trying to preempt that and go, okay, I'm going to come up with something to say so that I don't look like a fool once, you know, they're done talking. In fact, I was at lunch with a lawyer client recently, and he was complaining about jury selection, how hard it was, which was always hilarious to me because I think that's the one time we can actually connect on a human level. But of course, lawyers are often have their humanness trained out of them in law school. And so we're talking and he says, I hate jury selection because you can prepare your side, but you never know what they're going to say. So it's always, you can never be fully prepared. And I said, you know, that's so true. How much did you prepare for today's conversation? And he said, what do you mean? I said, the conversation we're having right now. He said, I didn't prepare at all. I said, and you're doing so well. It's amazing. But it's so true. We tend to be more present in our day-to-day activities. Mm-hmm. We go to coffee. We have lunch with people. We're not rehearsing what we're going to say. We're just there and present. And I think those are the best speakers. And people always talk about my presentations and how fun they are to watch. It's because they're non-verbally excellent. At least I hope. I keep working at that. But I'm also very conversational, like we're having coffee, me and these 300 people in the group. And I think that's where that piece comes in, is you've got to be here. You've got to be present. You've got to have enough self-trust to not have to constantly be thinking ahead two or three sentences and just be with the person in front of you. That's the first piece. That's the mind piece.
From what you said, it reminds me of a lot of podcasters go through this as well. A lot of beginner podcasters go through the same thing where we feel like, oh, I have to prepare all these questions and I have to know exactly what to say when they're finished speaking. And then while that person's speaking, we are freaking out about what the next question is to ask. And that's a skill that, you know, you have to learn as you go and you get better and better at it. But I can completely relate to what your clients go through with that.
No, it's so true. It's so true because I think once you drop in, really it's not, you say it's a skill, but, and I'm sure that it is on a certain level, but really it's just it's confidence, isn't it? That you're going to be able to follow up on whatever I say or any of your other interviewees because you're present and aware and something will come up for you, like this story. You didn't pram the story that you just said, you know, before we started talking. And I think that's the piece, is that you're present enough to trust that you can handle whatever gets thrown at you because you're breathing and you're aware, which breathing is the number one way to get yourself present. We talk a lot about breathing here as a number one communication skill of all time. Breathing gets you present. And so the better breather you are, the more present you can be.
What is it about breathing that helps you get present?
Well, I think, you know, most of the time, if you watch people, probably if you watched beginning podcasters or if you watched attorneys, when they go away, like I said a minute ago, they tend to hold their breath. right? So we tend to hold our breath when we are fearful or we're unsure. And what that does is activate your fight or flight response, which now makes you go into survival mode. And now you're not even thinking about anything. You're just thinking about, how do I get out of this? What do I do? How do I save my butt, basically? When you breathe, you infuse your body with chemicals of calmness and you ground yourself. You know, we say here at Forte that breathing or authenticity shows people who you are, but breathing shows people how you are. So it communicates to other people that you've got this. And the number one thing that any audience wants from its speaker or interviewer or lawyer is to know you've got this. We want you to do well. We want you to own that space when you're in front of us, because if you don't, we feel uncomfortable. It really is about us. It's very selfish. And so when you breathe and own it, you communicate, we're all going to be okay. I'm going to get you through this, because breathing gets communicated. So that's the number one way to keep you grounded, which then brings us to the second piece, which is the body. So it starts with the mind. You got to be here to have presence, but then you communicate your presence through the body. And so being aware of what you're communicating non-verbally and how you want to adapt and change depending on what's going on in the situation is also a big piece of it. For example, we talk in our work about two different sets of nonverbals. So we have our authoritative nonverbals. That's where the voice curls down, like what I'm doing now. We call it the James Bond voice pattern. And if you're standing, waiter over both feet. And if you're gesturing, the palms are down. And you tend to want to use authoritative body language and voice pattern when you're sending information, meaning this is one-way communication. You need to listen up. But you don't want to use that all the time. People who constantly use authoritative tend to look impatient or angry or not being open. So we also have the approachable set of nonverbals, where if you're speaking, the voice tends to curl up at the ends of sentences and your palms tend to focus up and you might have your weight over to one side. And we want to use approachable body language when you're seeking information. And so much of presence is understanding when to use each, right? So when I'm sending information and I want it to be understood, I'm going to curl my voice down, turn those palms down. But when I'm seeking information, I'm going to change my voice like I've changed it now. I'm going to tilt my head to the side. I'm going to have my palms facing up so that I can get information from the person that I'm speaking with. And excellent communicators know how to go in and out and know how to read the situation and do both. So that's a huge part of presence, is the body. The third one is space, which is the hardest one to communicate, because it's kind of this thing that we've hit on, but we can't quite explain how it works, in that you have to be present. You have to use your body to communicate presence, but then you have to send your presence outward into the space that you're in. And here's the general rule of thumb. We are aware of how much space you, the presenter, are aware of. So meaning, if you're only focused on your body or the few feet in front of you, to the audience, you are going to appear very small. But if instead, when you stand on a stage or in a meeting and you take in all the space around you, so you can know how high the ceilings are, you have the space behind you, you're kind of thinking all the way to the back of the room, to the farthest corner, that increases your presence, because now you've expanded your awareness of space. And so everyone around you kind of feels this expansiveness. I was telling this story in a seminar, and a woman came up to me and she said, "Oh my goodness, I understand exactly what you're saying, because I'm a ballroom dancer in my spare time. And my teacher says when I'm dancing with my partner and I'm looking at my partner, I still need to keep the audience in mind, even though I'm not making eye contact with the audience, because the audience will know whether I'm thinking about them or not. And if I'm not thinking about them or aware of them, they will feel like it's a private dance and then there's no reason for them to watch." I said, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about space. That you're kind of including that whole room, that whole area. And yet most people, when they speak, they are very small. They're only focused right in front of them, maybe on their notes, and that gets communicated. So that's the third component. And then the fourth component is others. So not only do you have to be here, communicate presence through your body and into the space in which you're communicating in, you also have to have an eye on who you're communicating it to and how are they reacting to you. And adapt your communication based on what you're observing. So those are the four components of presence. And we work with people when we do presence coaching on expanding in one or all of those areas, because everyone seems to have at least one of those areas that they can improve in.
Just going back to the concept of the body that you were talking about and how you've got these two types of presence. You've got your authoritative and approachable. And there are these different things that we can do. So we can change our palms. We can change the way that we stand. How does someone who is getting started with this do those things with their body while also focusing on what they're saying, you know, and making it look like it's natural, you know, without being too awkward? How do we start doing that?
That's a great question, because it just reminds me, we had our opening statement studio here a couple weekends ago, and these are lawyers that have been practicing 20, 30 years, but they come in and I have them working on all these nonverbal techniques, and suddenly it's like they start forgetting their content. They can't remember where they're going because they're so focused on what they're doing with their hands and are they breathing and how are they moving and so on and so forth. So we say that it takes practice, first of all. But I think the bigger piece is that you really have to be in the mindset too. I mean, yes, adopting authoritative body language and voice pattern is going to make you feel more authoritative. But the reverse is also true. You've got to actually own, and going back to this idea of owning it, that you are authoritative, and that will help make the body language more natural. Meaning, do not, when I was watching these attorneys 2 weeks ago, here they were and they're moving from, you know, in front of the jury and our mock jury over to our, you know, their visual, and the way they were walking from just being in front of the jury, and we're just talking about maybe 5 or 6 feet over to their visual, it was almost like they were like tiptoeing or like asking for permission to even be there in the first place. And so when I coached them in front of the jury, I said, look, the way you're walking is communicating to the jury that you don't belong here. So let me have you try this again. And now I want you to act like the jury are 12 people that you've invited over for dinner, and one of them has asked you for another glass of wine. How would you walk into the kitchen to go get that wine? Would you tiptoe into your own kitchen? And they said, no, of course not. I said, okay, do it right now. I want you to walk right now from where you are into the kitchen, because we have our office space here is an actual reimagined condo. So we have a kitchen right off of the jury space. And boy, did that ever change the way they walked. So I think a lot of it's mind space. You've got to actually own the authoritative persona. Or on the flip side, if you're using the approachable persona, you have to actually want to hear from people. I mean, these aren't skills that you just use to manipulate. These are actual things you're doing that should match up with your intention. So if I want to hear from someone, you naturally turn the palms up. You'll just notice if you're listening to your child, for example, tell a story about school, you'll naturally tilt your head over to the side. It's just naturally what happens. So part of it is awareness. You know, now these are new things that you're bringing into your awareness, so that's going to help. But part of it is actually taking that persona to heart and then, of course, practicing it. People always ask me, because my persona, as you might have imagined, is more authoritative in general. I'm from Finland originally, and Finns tend to be cold and, you know, brutal, and our voice pattern always curls down. And so people ask me, how long did it take you to, you know, adopt the approachable persona without having to think about it? And I said, never. I still have to think about it. When I'm asking someone for their input, I still have to think to myself, tilt your head, bring the palms up. I mean, I start to do it more naturally once I get in the position, but because my resting place, quote unquote, is authoritative, I still have to nudge myself to make sure I go all the way over to the approachable. Am I being manipulative? No, because I actually do want to hear from the person, and I know that adopting those nonverbals are going to help them feel comfortable with me enough to open up and talk to me, which is what I want.
Absolutely. You know, in Australia, we tend to put an upward inflection at the end of every sentence.
Yep.
So it sounds like we're asking a question. Yeah, but we're like a little bit too approachable. And we often sound like, you know, we don't actually know anything because we're questioning everything we say. Mm-hmm. And even when people say their names, they'll say, my name's Christina. And it's like, really? Are you sure about that?
Right, exactly.
We have to go the other way.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that people ask me, how does this work cross-culturally? And I say, you know, I do in my seminars a lot of times, I'll say, what do you think is the culture, I'm talking nonverbal culture, of, say, the South here in America versus the East Coast? And people always immediately get it. They go, oh, the South is approachable. I go, yeah, you know, with all the ma'ams and the thank you, ma'am, and all that kind of thing. Where on the East Coast, you know, your New Yorker is much more authoritative, much more voiced down. So a lot of this is regional, but the same thing still applies. Now, would I be able to be as authoritative in Australia as I would be able to be in New York? Probably not. I have to tone my authoritativeness down a little bit because the culture there tends to be more approachable, but that doesn't mean that authoritative still isn't sending the message that it's, you know, I'm sending information that you need to listen to. I just might need to back it off a little bit.
Now, when you talk about others, so to me, that sounds like, how do you engage the audience? Like, how do you respond to what they're doing? Is that what you mean by that?
Absolutely. So when we define nonverbal intelligence, for example, we say there are three parts. The first part is awareness. So you have to be aware of what you're communicating nonverbally and what other people are communicating nonverbally. But the second piece of nonverbal intelligence is adaptability. So not only do I need to be aware, I need to adapt based on what I see. So a lot of that can take you back to the authoritative and approachable. So often we mismatch. So we go into our audience and they are, let's say, a bunch of attorneys and they are highly authoritative. And how do I know that? Well, if I listen to them talking, their voice curls down like mine is right now. They don't make a lot of eye contact. They're sitting very straight. And I come in as presenter lady and I'm like, oh, let's start with a joke. Immediately I mismatch, right? I haven't read my audience. My audience needs to know that I'm credible before I can joke. So in that audience, I would come up and I would say, thank you for being here. Let's get started. And boom, I'd get right to the issue because nonverbally, they're communicating to me, get to the issue. And when I do that, I increase what we call here permission, meaning now they're more receptive to me because I've met them where they are. Now, vice versa, I go and I talk to a group of kindergarten teachers and everyone's talking like this and everyone's got their pastries and their coffee and it's so nice. I come into that group and I say, all right, let's get started. They look at me like, who's this person? She's so unfriendly. So I think that's the problem with most presenters. They go, this is my style. And I say, well, that's great, but you need to listen to and watch your audience to know how to adapt to what they're doing. It's like attorneys who've been trained to always ask what the juror's hobbies are. So they come in and they go, okay, well, before we get started, let me ask, what are your hobbies? And I always tell them, I say, you know what a juror's thinking when you ask them what their hobbies are? They're thinking, what the hell does that have to do with anything? I'm here against my will, missing my son's baseball game for, I don't even know why I'm here, but I've been called by the judge and you're asking me what my hobbies are? Talk about a classic mismatch. We say that every single communication situation falls into one of two buckets. You're either tending to the relationship or you are dealing with the issue. One or the other. Jurors are not there to have a relationship with you. They want to know, why am I here? Issue. So you need to meet them there. You need to get to the issue. And vice versa, there's other situations where you need to go more relationship before you can get to the issue. You can tell that nonverbally. You know, more approachable nonverbals tend to mean more relationship-oriented people. More authoritative nonverbals tend to tell you that the people are more issue-oriented. If you can go there and not only get to the issue or tend to the relationship, but actually adopt the same nonverbal patterns as your audience, boy, does your permission go up as a presenter.
Absolutely. And that's, you've made it sound quite simple, actually, which I like. It's like you've either got this or you've got that. And I think that's a really good starting place for people to start recognizing, you know, is this authoritative? Is this more
approachable?
I keep forgetting that second one. I don't know why. I need to write that down. Anyway, but that's excellent. Sari, thank you so much for joining me on the show. You've shared some amazing things and I'm going to start getting out there and noticing other people's body language a little bit more as well. I heard that you have a new ebook out.
We do. It's called Pump Up the Volume, Words of Inspiration for Living a Bold, Big Life. And we are giving it to your audience for free if they want to go download it. It's at our website, www.nonverbalforte.com/pump-up-the-volume. And then there's also some free resources on our website. There's a tip sheet on approachable and authoritative. There's another tip sheet on breathing. All of that's free. They can do all of that at our website.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sari.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Big thanks to Sari de la Motte from Forte for being an amazing guest on the show this week. I learned so much from her. I really hope that you did too. You can find out more about what she does at nonverbalforte.com or simply visit the show notes at thecmethod.com/Sari. And if you enjoyed this interview, please, I'd really appreciate it if you could help spread the word and share this episode with your friends, colleagues, whoever you think may also benefit from it. I really appreciate you sharing it out. It's the best way to get
these empowering messages out to as many people as possible. Oh, and before I wrap up, remember to register for the Overcome Public Speaking Anxiety course if public speaking is something that you want to improve on, but your anxiety holds you back from being effective. I'm so excited to be finally launching it. It is packed full of practical exercises to help you build your confidence as a speaker. So go register now for instant access at thecmethod.com/anxietycourse. That's thecmethod.com/anxietycourse. And that's all from me this week. Thank you so much for spending some time with me today. Keep on being awesome, and I'll talk to you next week. My name's Christina Canters, and this has been Stand Out, Get Noticed.